Before we get started with this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me let you know that it's brought to you by Draft.com. Fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why you need to try Draft. No more getting crushed by the pros. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA, NFL, or for this podcast purpose, PGA Draft right now. Be done drafting in under 5 minutes and get paid out the day the tournament is done. The PGA version is great. You draft, you enjoy the 4 days, and you collect your money Sunday night. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players, this is the catch, all new players, when they make their first deposit, get entry into a real money draft by using the promo code SDSports. You got to use the promo code SDSports to get that free entry. That's right. Playing a real money draft for free by using the promo code SDSports. But it gets even better. For some crazy reason you do not like Draft, they are offering a $100 money-back guarantee. Just search Draft in your app store or go to Draft.com and come play for free right now. But you have to use the promo code SDSports. Void or prohibited, must be 18 or older. See website for details. Offer must be redeemed within 14 days. Now, welcome to this week's edition of the always pressing PGA DFS podcast.
Play. What's up? Yeah.
Kayla's in the building.
Yeah.
Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they would see the thunder? Just remember when you come up, the show goes on.
And welcome back to another edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, previewing the 2018 Genesis Open. Before we get started, you can check out the podcast at Always Press DFS, and it's on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spreaker. Go get some ratings and reviews and pass on the word, spread the word. Bucks cannot join us this week. He has some ill kids and an ill wife, and it's not pleasant at all, so he's on daddy duty. So we have our normal boy, Jesse, on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing?
Doing well, man. Good to be here again.
Good, good. Always good to have you around. And we have a nice call to the bullpen if this was baseball, but it's golf. So a good sub for the week. You can find him on fanshare.sports.com. He's on Twitter at LoganHarper22. Logan, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Doing well tonight. Thanks for having me on. It's always good to talk some golf, especially this week at Riviera.
Yeah. Awesome tournament to do it with, so we're glad to have you here and get some insight. You know, people know we talk a lot about FanShare Sports on here, and Logan does a great article called Taking the Pulse each week, and comes out in the middle of the week to kind of give you a heads up on who the high chalky guys might be and good pivots. And I know Jesse's got a pivot he's going to talk about when we recap the AT&T that worked out very, very well. So let's recap the AT&T first before we get to our FanShare corner. Ted Potter Jr., out of nowhere to many, he ran away with Monterey Peninsula on Saturday and carried it over to Sunday. Jesse, any takeaways from Mr. Potter?
Yeah, that was pretty fun to watch on Sunday. He obviously shot 62 and bogeyed his last two holes on Saturday to get in contention, and then everybody expected him to completely fold with DJ on his heels and the likes of Jason Day and Mickelson right there. And he did not. He played an outstanding round, shot 33 on the front and turned it around with all pars on the back, 36, which is all he needed to do because there was pretty much nobody charging at him as far as making a lot of birdies out there. So it was a long day, 6-hour round, pretty boring from a viewer perspective, but really happy for Ted Potter, man. You could tell that guy was just a different world in that interview after the round was over.
Yeah, it's a good tournament to win. You get over $1 million, get your exemption status, all that good stuff. So, Logan, any thoughts on, you know, Ted Potter or kind of the top of the leaderboard?
I think the biggest takeaway is everyone kind of was, you know, writing it off. It was basically saying it was a done deal with DJ there at the top and pretty heavy favorite, you know, going into the day against Potter, and he just wasn't able to step up this time and finish the deal. Curious to see how that kind of affects people's thoughts going into this week with DJ, you know, coming into another course where he plays well at. And I think a lot of people will think that he's got, you know, got a good edge coming into this week.
Yeah, and outside of Ted Potter winning it, you know, it's tied for second. You had Phil Reavy, who's been on a tear, Day, DJ, even Streelman at 13-under. But then you had Stallings, and Jimmy Walker made a push on Sunday, and Chappie, and even our boy Grayson Murray, and good old Paul Casey was there for you, Jesse. It was quite an interesting leaderboard of, you know, the big names and some kind of out-of-nowhere guys. Pebble has a tendency to do that with that shorter course. Any thoughts on those performances, Jesse?
Yeah, that was a weird leaderboard for a while. And then finally DJ kind of pushed his way up there on Saturday. Day made another Friday push there for Day as well. But, yeah, I mean, you got the likes of Jimmy Walker coming kind of out of nowhere. Hadn't played very well in a while, so good to see him back. Grayson Murray, it's either boom or bust with him every single week. Troy Merritt, I mean, he hasn't played good in a long time, and he triples the last hole to still finish top 10. So, leaderboard was wild. And we talked about it a little bit, I think it was on Saturday or Sunday, me and you, Bubba, we were talking about how, you know, these short courses bring a lot of guys into contention, and that's pretty much what happened here, I think. But, yeah.
Paul Casey had a sneaky top 10 there, too, and he's really striking the ball well. So, another guy to keep an eye out there, eighth place.
Yeah, very sneaky there. I was shocked Jimmy Walker put it together on Sunday because I was literally watching him throw clubs on Saturday. He was so frustrated with his game.
Like, I remember you saying that. Yeah. And then I saw him come up the leaderboards Sunday, like, what the hell?
That shocked me. I was actually shocked that he made a run on Sunday because he looked like he wanted to give up the game of golf on Saturday. So it's pretty impressive. We've already mentioned DJ, so let's talk some Phil. You know, I'm not the biggest Phil fan at all. And we were all over him last week. He was my one and done pick and paid off beautifully. Couldn't have asked for much more. We'll start with you, Logan. Do we think Phil's back? That's back to back outstanding performances. Sure, their courses he does well at. Riviera is another one he's done well at. Is Phil back, or are we still kind of like, I don't know yet?
Yeah, I still don't trust him with the driver. I think this was a course he was able to, you know, get a bunch of wedges in his hand. I kind of talked about that in my preview, and I think he was able to use the short game and really make a bunch of birdies there. And I think this course might be a little bit more demanding for him. And I don't know. I think certain courses, you know, if it was Augusta week and, you know, he obviously has some magic there, maybe, but I think it's still a course by course basis with Phil.
Yeah, most definitely. Jesse, what were your thoughts on Phil?
Yeah, the thing with him, like, so typically there's at least one or two holes a week where he's just blowing up, making double, triple. He made five bogeys the whole entire weekend. So all four rounds, one bogey in round four, one bogey in round three. Three at the beginning of round one, bogey-free on Friday. I mean, that's the difference right now for Phil. He's not missing those, you know, putts inside 5 feet that you see him miss all the time where he lips him because he's trying to force him. I don't know what he's doing different or if he's doing anything different, if it's just a mindset for him. But that's what I see different with Phil. I'm kind of with Logan. I mean, I think if you play and you watch golf long enough, like, you get these bias in your head, and Phil will always have a bias in my head, I think, it's just hard to trust him. I totally agree.
He hasn't won in years. So
right, that too.
Yeah, as long as he's below 10K, he's always going to have a look at certain courses for me. Let's look at our little fan share recap of the week. Jesse, take the AT&T Pro-Am, and Logan, if you have any insights on what we're talking about, feel free to jump in at any time.
Yeah, so one thing I do every week is obviously read what Logan puts out on Wednesday, and then along with that, he's got the projections for that coming up week and, you know, what they think ownership wise will be. And I was not a believer in the 31% DJ projection. And you projected him at 31.5% and he ended up being 31.7% owned in the $3.20 max, which is quite amazing to me. I don't know if you want to touch on kind of what you do there, Logan.
Yeah, sure.
Too many trade secrets, but maybe give a little bit of your process into what kind of goes into thinking, you know, in that particular situation or in general.
Yeah, so obviously we've got an algorithm that runs, but I think we've got a lot of different toggles, and, you know, looking at each week, one of the biggest things I kind of review is kind of the structuring of, you know, what everybody that's playing kind of looks into their lineup and sees, you know, this week we kind of want to stack two guys at the top, or whether it's going to be kind of a balanced week, and really try to understand the structuring considerations that go into the lineup. And we definitely saw a lot of tags at the top there with DJ and kind of some of those other guys. So we kind of had an inkling that some of these top guys would hit the 20, close to 30% range. And particularly DJ, he was really getting some late movement kind of towards the end of the week. A lot of people kind of going in, and he's world number one for a reason. He's, you know, he's kind of the guy, right? So we felt pretty comfortable kind of with the way the math ran out that he would be up there close to 30.
With you, that was a heck of a call. So overall for the week, I guess it was probably your all's best week projection wise.
Yeah, we a little slower start to the year, but this was really kind of heating up now, and hopefully keep it up going into the majors now. But yeah, great. We came out with a 0.89 R squared, pretty much spot on most of the top guys. I think the one surprise was Jason Day there. Kind of, I saw a little bit of negative buzz, which we didn't factor in because we thought it was kind of just a few people. But some people were kind of saying, you know, with the back, you just never know. It was coming off of a win, and Day ended up being around 18. We projected him around 25, and he ended up obviously being a great play. And so,
right on. Yeah, definitely. Especially with that surge up the leaderboard on Sunday, he definitely paid off. And actually, the guy who won the 333 had him and didn't have DJ, which surprised me. The guy who won the $4 $100,000 did have DJ. So, anyways, moving on. The one thing also too, you know, is the blog post that you do. You had Steve Stricker as kind of a chalk pivot, and had Cook as a projected high number for good reason. He had a lot of tags. That price was ridiculous. I would still, of course, Cook missed the cut. Stricker finished 26th. He shot 76 on Sunday. He was right there in the mix until he blew up a little bit on Sunday. But I would still play Cook at that number of 7,000. I thought that was just a completely ridiculous number on DraftKings' part. So I would do it again. You hit on Day already, but I guess the big chalk miss was Patrick Reed. I didn't realize how high he was going to be going into it. He was nowhere on my radar. Bubba, did you have a little bit of Patrick Reed as well?
I wanted nothing to do with Patrick Reed. I was just as shocked as you were by all this.
I didn't see that coming at all.
It was pretty odd with Reedy right there at 8,000. I had actually mentioned him on a different podcast last week. He was right there $100 more with probably the best form there is, you know, out there without a win. And very surprised people were kind of flocking to Reed there, I guess, just based on, you know, the name recognition and win equity, I guess. But even in cash games, he was very heavily owned. So
yeah, that baffled me. Like I said, he wasn't on my radar at all. I would much rather have Reavy going into it. I thought the Reavy price was really ridiculous. He wasn't getting any of the buzz that apparently Pat got. So yeah, that's pretty much the recap there of last week.
Yeah, I think back on Stricker, I mean obviously we try to highlight the chalk, and then like you say, each week, like, it's more highlighting the chalk, and you can make your own opinions on whether to pivot. I think Cook was it. I actually did pivot off of him in GPPs just because he's more of a, you know, he's a newer guy on tour. If people were actually being on him, there's just a little bit of risk there, even though he has been performing well. And Stricker, with kind of his wedge game, I felt pretty comfortable, was looking really good in kind of the 333 in a couple contests until a huge fall off for Stricker on Sunday. Shot a 76 with, you know, maybe one or two birdies. It was pretty ugly. So that cost me what could have been some pretty high finishes, but still 26th place, good pivot off of Cook. And I think he finished kind of tied with Rafa Cabrera there at the same price range. So yeah, we try to give like one or two options down at the low end to consider as a, you know, maybe a pivot. He was 2% to 5% owned. So yeah, definitely a good, I mean, he was in third place going into to Sunday. So definitely worth the risk, I think.
I agree. You know, one thing that I've talked about with a few people is obviously ownership. You know, we talk about it a lot on this pod, and I consider it as I go throughout the week. But, you know, I would pivoting off somebody who's lower dollar amount, my opinion, is a better route to take versus pivoting off somebody's high dollar. For example, DJ, I'll play DJ all day at 40%. Whereas, yeah, you know, not playing Cook and being on somebody else who has a much higher chance to miss the cut.
And that was my thought process, right? I've stacked DJ and Day at the top, and if you're going to do that, like you said, he's going to. I projected at 30% and 25% ownership collectively. That's 55% right there. Like, if you're adding Cook to that, you're bumping your ownership, you know, collectively for the six players all the way up to 75. Probably we're projecting Cook around 20 or so. You know, and I knew just by the way I was going to start my lineups, you had to find a pivot just based on the structuring of my lineup. So yeah, that's why I went Stricker.
I like it. I mean, I had bonuses of fan shares is that, so pretty happy with it.
When you're looking at the Genesis preview coming up, we have Tiger Woods is back. He's $8,800 this week. At the Farmers, he was 14.1%. Logan, what do you think he'll be this year, just if you had to guess on a Monday?
Yeah, so this is going to be tough because, you know, he actually finished, you know, 26th place, I think, at the Farmers. So surprisingly well, he looked good. $8,800 is, you know, you can fit him in there with one of the top guys pretty easily. I think he'll be a little bit higher this time. I think a little bit higher than that 14%. So if I had to pick a number right now, I'd say, 18.5, 19%.
What do you think, Jesse?
If he's at that, I'll talk about that a little bit more. But if he's that high, I'll love it because I will. I totally agree. I mean, there's definitely a factor there of people remembering him making the cut at the Farmers when a lot of guys missed the cut who were, you know, like Ricky and several others missed the cut there. So I think there's a pretty good chance. I would probably agree with that number.
Yeah, we'll have to see the narrative shake out, because if people are saying, you know, this course doesn't fit him as well, that kind of thing, maybe you can get like a little negative streak. But I'm going to have, like, with the data we have, I'm going to have to put a floor of, you know, 14% if that's what he was at Farmers, at least, especially in the lower dollar amount. I think at the higher money contest, he might be a little lower. But I think in the $3, $4, he's going to be at least 15%.
People forget that he barely made the cut. He made the cut on 18.
On the number, so,
yeah.
With a birdie.
Yeah, with a birdie on 18. So it could have been dire straits for people there. Look at the top 10 in DraftKings points last year at the Genesis. You know, DJ won the tournament. He was definitely there. He was the number one ranked tag on Fanshare last year. But then you had guys like, you know, Scott Brown and Charlie Hoffman, both 85, had zero tags. Wesley Bryan, zero tags. They were third, fourth, and sixth overall. You had Kevin Na with a good finish. Outside of DJ and Thomas Peters at 13, the next highest tagged person was Ollie at 31 in the top 10. So it's 31 or below. So a lot of guys with low ownership projections did very, very well here last year. So that's something to keep an eye on in a tournament like this, and we'll get into some picks
Last year was also an interesting year because I think there was kind of a very rainy day on Friday.
Pretty soft
conditions on the weekend. So definitely kind of shook things up a little bit.
So I think they played like a round and a half on Sunday or something like that. Pretty deep. Nine of the 10 most tagged players did make the cut last year. So that's something to keep in mind. This is a very, very full field we have coming up this week that we'll be breaking down. And then the last thing, as we mentioned it last week, and it helped out quite a bit on kind of some last decisions I made, but, you know, your current form, your top 10 DK points out of the last three events, you got the top 10 in this justice order. You got DJ, Reavy, pretty simple, but a sneaky one in third is Sam Saunders. You have Justin Thomas, Phil Mickelson, Chappie is sixth. Daniel Berger, Brendan Steele, Kokrak, who we talked about last week, Jesse, it's so cheap, he's ninth. And then a guy I do want to mention when we talk DraftKings picks later, Brian Gay is the 10th most consistent player right now on the DraftKings points. That's something to definitely keep in mind coming into this week. But anything stands out to you guys on that stuff? Nope.
There's some weird names up there. Some weird names.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, like a Sam Saunders, Chappie, yeah. Kokrak, Gay.
Kokrak, I was actually watching him a bit at the Pebble Beach tournament this past weekend when I was out there, and he was looking pretty good. So I don't know. I consider him at that price.
I'm a fan of Coke.
Yeah, we're big fans of Kokrak. He's a great guy. Let's go into the Genesis Open preview now as we've recapped everything. Jesse, give us some past event history on Genesis.
Yeah, so formerly named the Los Angeles Open. I've been playing at Riviera Country Club since 1999. Played in the year past that, too, but we're not getting back that far one way or the other. So last year, DJ, minus 17 over Scott Brown and Thomas Peters, won by five shots. 2016, Bubba Watson. One-shot win over Kokrak and Adam Scott. James Hahn was your 2015 champion. Minus six, which is an odd number, but over Paul Casey and Dustin Johnson, Bubba Watson again, 2014, 15 under, two shots over DJ. So scoring can get pretty low here. There are some outlier kind of weird numbers in there, like that six under and seven under in 2012, but I'm guessing that was probably had a lot to do with some weather that maybe moved in. But scoring should be, you know, we should be mid teens or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I'll go into Buck's course preview that he usually does. It's a par 71, 7,300 yards, so good distance on this course. Average winning score is around minus 14 the last, you know, so many years, with an average cut line of plus two. We got Poa greens, and then you're going to hear it all week, the Kikui fairways and rough. And Kikui is no fun to play out of, I'll tell you that for a fact. So that's something to keep in mind there. The Riviera Club is one of the most legendary clubs out here. It's hosted USGA events, majors. It's built in 1926. It is it's an old-style course with rolling undulations in the fairways and rough, providing awkward stances. Surprisingly, there aren't too many push-up greens that have false fronts, which are quite common on older courses. Beautiful, well-manicured, classic design with touches of modern accents in the bunkering. It may be old, but it does challenge the tour pros with its length and its Kikui rough, which can get quite tricky. We have four par threes, a 166, 192, 199, and 236. 18% of DraftKings points come from the par threes. You have, on the par fours, you have one short par four under 400 yards, and you have four between 400 and 450, and six pretty long par fours at 450 to 500. 45% of the scoring comes from the par fours. And then we have three par fives, one that's around 500 yards, two that are around 590 yards, 35% scoring from the par fives. I guess what Bucks is saying we're going to be looking at is you'll see about 11 or 12 holes where your approach shot's about 150 to 200 out. So you're going to want to focus on guys that, you know, are good around 175. The average green, these are small, kind of like Pebble. Pebble's the smallest you'll look at. They're just slightly bigger than Pebble. So keep that in mind when you're looking at scrambling and whatnot there. There are over 60 bunkers on the course. I know they're in the fairway. I've heard people talk about their shot maker. It's a shot maker's course. The bombers do have an advantage here if they're accurate, but they do have to avoid some trickiness out there. Like Charles Howell III loves the way you kind of have to play the course, not just bombs away it on certain holes. So pick your poison there as well. But you got some trees. I know they put some trees out on like two and four fairways. All in all, though, it is a scoreable course, like you said, Gussie, mid-teens, but still some challenges out there to keep it interesting. Logan, what are some key stats you'd be looking at when you're building your teams this week?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned the POA putting, kind of if you can find some stats where you narrow down the putting to actual POA greens, I think that's going to be really important, you know, out on the West Coast. And then I think, you know, just total tee to green game, you mentioned bombers kind of do well. If you look at kind of some of the guys that have played well here in the past, Adam Scott, DJ, guys that can just really mash the ball, Thomas Peters as well. So looking for a little bit of driving distance, try to get some of those, you know, extra scoring and then kind of tee to green game. I think that the short par four you mentioned is probably the, you know, the most memorable hole in this course, number 10, kind of a risk reward, yeah. Drivable 300 yard par four, basically. So some of the guys have enough power, they can kind of reach that and not have to deal with that tough wedge shot. So
I'm pretty sure I remember seeing DJ hit his three wood into that last year.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Huge, you know, strokes gained on the field for that one shot. You know, that's huge.
Yep. What about you, Jesse? What stats are you looking at?
So one of the things obviously that's important is that the length here is that it is longer than probably your average course. So I factor in driving distance, green and regulation. One thing that I've done, and it kind of goes along with what Logan was just talking about, is weight, course, putts per round. So basically just trying to figure out guys who have putted well here, because if I, from what I've read and seen and heard, you know, these Poa greens are difficult to get used to if you've been around this track and you've played well before. You know, that's obviously a major plus. So last week I actually did something similar, except for this week I'm not really taking into account driving accuracy. And, you know, 11 out of 13 of my picks for, you know, that you put up on the Sports Degens there, Bubba made the cut with, you know, the three, you know, up top, and besides Ted Potter Jr., of course. So I'm going back to a similar type of deal this week, except for just taking out driving accuracy. Because from what I've read, you know, it doesn't really matter. The fairways are tight, and if you hit the fairways or you don't, you know, it's not that big in correlation with a good high finish here.
Yeah, I agree. The bombers can play here. So I'm looking at kind of the strokes gained, tee to green, and approach shots. And I definitely – Vijay Singh was – you mentioned Josh before, Jesse. He had a quote from Vijay Singh in there that says – you don't have to be able to play this course. Basically, course history comes well into play here. So I do want to look at that. There are some first-timers and not very experienced guys here I do like this week, but that will come into play to kind of make or break stuff for me. But recent form, the usual stuff we talk about, Jesse, I'll definitely be looking at in this.
We take this brief break in the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast to talk to you about RotoWear, one of the greatest shirts in fantasy sports. They have DFS shirts, fantasy season long, all kinds of great shirts. They're the best quality shirts in the industry. No other brand can compete with RotoWear in terms of quality, premium blend fabric, super soft, comfortable, athletic fit shirts, specialized printing process, design as part of the shirt, literally dyed, bleached into the fabric, no thick ink. It's ridiculous the amount of options you can find, over 30 different designs. Fantasy football, baseball, hockey, basketball, DFS, they keep coming out with more and more and more stuff. Men's, women's, kids, you name it, they've got it. There's lots of buzz kicking up in the fantasy industry about it. People are wearing these shirts. They're representing the shirts. They are great quality shirts. And you can have one too. You can have more than one, as many as you want. Just use the promo code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, DEGENS, for 20% off your order. Go to rotowear.com. Or go to @RotoWear on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check out what they have. They're giving away free shirts all the time on Twitter. But when you go to purchase, use the code DEGENS, D-E-G-E-N-S, for 20% off your order. Now back to the Always Pressing PGA TFS podcast.
All right, let's kick off the DraftKings preview. We'll start in the 10K and above range. We've got five golfers, DJ, Spieth, Rory, Justin Thomas, and Paul Casey. It's going to be a tough tournament for you, Jesse, with two of your favorites in it. But we'll stick in the 10K and above, and we'll let Logan kick us off. Who are you liking up here?
Yeah, so 10K and above, I think, shockingly, I mean, DJ, hard not to like him, obviously. I can't say not to play DJ. He's defending champion, you know, playing well right now. I like DJ. But then I think my favorite kind of sneaky play here might be Justin Thomas. I think he's kind of rounding into form here. He fits that bomber type. He's a great birdie maker, and I think he might be kind of the way I want to go with structuring my lineups. There's a lot of value, just a lot of guys I like in the mid-range, and I can see myself making kind of more balanced lineups starting with Thomas, not really going down into, you know, the 6K range at all. So Thomas will probably be my highest owned guy there.
I like it. What about you, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one of those weeks where you can make a case for every guy up here, and I'll probably try to get a little piece of each one when I'm making, you know, lineups for the 20 max, or, you know, if I'm throwing a bunch into the $44 this week. But, like, for example, on my 444 team, it's probably going to be DJ. I just don't know how you fade him. I think he'll be high-owned again. I think one of the things about Dustin last week, especially on Sunday, was the pace of play. And they kind of talked about it a little bit on the broadcast. It's not going to be an issue this week. No amateurs, thank God. Just all pros out there. And so the pace will be a lot better. And this is a comfortable track for him. So obviously Paul Casey gets a little look for me. But up top, you know, I'm probably going to be 80, 90% of my money on Dustin Johnson.
Yeah, I agree with both you guys. It's hard to fade DJ. I'm not a fan of playing the high-priced guys like this. And I last week I didn't have anybody 10K and above, and I probably won't either this week. There's a lot of balance I like out here to top 10 it or better, but it's DJ. And then I was looking at Justin Thomas. We fade him all the time, for some reason, Logan, but you need a guy up here that's gonna that can win, and when he's on, he can win, and he's gonna. I think he'll be one of the lowest owned out of these five, so I like that take at 10-7 for sure. Let's go into the 9K range. We have four golfers: Phil Fleetwood, or as Jesse calls him, Paul Casey Jr., Berger, and Brandon Grace. Jesse, who do you like in the 9Ks?
You know, we talked a little bit on Phil earlier. I don't think he's a bad play for GPPs, especially, you know, lower dollar GPPs. For me, though, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood's the top of my model at this point. It's rather tilting because I like him a lot. But the issue that when he comes over here, you know, obviously he's not played on the West Coast. That kind of freaks me out with these greens. He's never been known as the best putter in the world to begin with. He's a ball striker extraordinaire. That's really where he excels. So, but it's just hard for me not to play him a bunch. A, because he's the new PC. He's not PC Junior. He's new PC. And he's just playing really well right now. Just playing really well. Sixth, first, sixth, his last three events. So pretty good.
What about you, Logan?
Yeah, I'm on it. I'm on that Fleetwood as well. I think, I mean, I don't, why are you calling him Paul Casey? He actually wins. I don't know. I don't get that reference, but I think he's a winner, and he's a, I mean, I watched a lot of that, especially being out here on the West Coast, and watched a lot of that, you know, Middle East golf stretch. Yep. Yeah. So, and he got to see him a lot in prime time, mm-hmm. and he just really mashes the ball, just very good compression, and he just looks solid out there. So, I like Fleetwood the best in this range for sure.
Yeah,
probably won't be playing the other guys either.
No, I might have a little Mickelson because I do like the way he's playing, and I kind of want to ride it out as it goes. But I finally jumped on the train last week. I feel like I'm a bit, and I agree. Fleetwood's my guy at 9,500. Everything you guys said, this guy's playing just great, great golf. It is a little terrifying, Jesse, like you mentioned, because POA does affect some people, but. I don't know. I have a feeling he's been out here long enough already. He's had a few weeks off from the Euro Tour that he's probably played a little bit out here. And
I think one data point to note is he played really well in the WC Mexico last year, and I'm pretty sure those greens were POA, and he finished second place to DJ there. So, you know, maybe a comp course to this course, I guess, DJ Fleetwood. You never know.
Well,
yeah, he's
sick.
Logan,
they compare this course to Augusta as well. So we know how that went.
Everyone does.
See, that's the problem. So, Logan, last year I went all in on him at Augusta. I went down there and watched him play a few practice holes, and he was just throwing darts. And, of course, he shoots 78, 74 to completely miss the cut. So, after that, he became new PC for me because he wasn't winning. And then it's a long story, but either way, you're right. He can actually finish a golf tournament unlike Paul Casey. As evidenced by his start Sunday at Pebble last week.
Yeah, you gotta give him a break there. I think that might have been was his first start at Augusta. Everyone struggles, you know, first few times at Augusta. So
yeah, exactly. I'm not mad at him. I'm still a big fan.
No.
All right, let's get into the 8,000s. We got Woods, Alex Noren, Pat Perez, Leishman, Kuchar, Schauffele, Tony Finau, Bill Haas, and Chez Reavie, who I still think is underpriced at $8,000. I'll give mine real quick. I will be all over Chez at $8,000 again. This is my boy, and there's not many guys playing better golf than him right now. We already mentioned the, you know, top 10 the last 3 weeks, back to back top twos. He's basically T18 or better in four of his last five events. He did miss the cut here last year, but finished seventh the year before, and he's in really, really, really good form right now. Kuchar, his Saturday Sundays were just extremely disappointing at Pebble, so he finished T62, but going into the weekend, he's playing really well, and he's coming off a T22 and a T8 here. Kuchar's got that kind of game that works at a lot of courses, so I'm not worried about, you know, whatever difficulties approaching. Now, if I find out he's hurt, it's the only thing I can think of on the weekend because he usually plays Pebble well, so that surprised me. But 8,400 for Kuchar. Pat Perez, 8,600, has played well here. He's made 13 of 16 cuts here, T28 here last year, so 86 for Pat. And then Alex Noren has got my attention. I'm not fully on board with this. It's his first time here. Talk about a guy playing some really good golf right now at 8,700. Jesse, what do you like in this range?
Yeah, I'll back that Noren call. I'm not fully all in on him, but he's really high on my model, so I do like him. Kuchar again, Reavie again. I think Reavie will probably go overlooked again because he's not the He's not the bomber that you really want here. Course history is sketch, but that's the same for the last 2 weeks. He didn't have good course history last week. He didn't have good course history in Phoenix. So I'll take another chance on him. Another guy who I think is interesting, and this is one that I'll use Fantasy Share quite a bit to just kind of track and see where he's at, is Tony Finau.
Yep.
Terrible course history, miscut last 2 years, coming off a miscut in Phoenix. But you would think this type of course kind of fits his game, bomber, you know, really good with his irons. I guess it'll just kind of be a wait and see for me on that. But that price is pretty good on him, I think, at 8,200.
What do you like in the 8K range, Logan?
Yeah, so I mean, anytime Matt Kuchar is kind of this price range, it's kind of an auto play for me, just based on his historical top five, top ten rates. It's just you got to do it blindly. So I'm definitely in on Kuchar, and he's actually, you know, because of that finish at Pebble, not really getting any fan share buzz. It's early, but he has zero start calls so far, and you know, some of the leaders have like 14 start calls already. So maybe you can kind of get him a little under owned, and he's with that, you know, he's a top five machine, can, you know, get a leverage on the field there. And then I agree with your take on Reedy. I think people in general still just think of him as that, you know, 6K type of player, kind of the scrub player, and can't wrap their heads around paying 8K for Reedy. So hopefully he kind of just goes continually under owned, and I'm going to keep riding for sure.
Most definitely. Let's drop into the 7Ks, which has over half the field like usually. Again, this is a 144-player field, top 70s and ties advanced to the weekend. Jesse, give us a few that you like here in the 7K range.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like up top here in the 7K range. One thing that for large field GPPs that might make it a little bit different is starting, you know, kind of mid-8s and not even leaving the mid-7s here in lineup construction. I don't mind that at all, especially for a 50-50 double up type of deal. I think this pricing this week is much, much better than it was in weeks past. So it's a little bit sharper, and it's going to be a little bit more difficult, even though last week 6-6 was awful. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to get it this week. So starting up top, I'm a big Steele fan. He makes birdies. He's got the length. He's got like 1,000 straight cuts made here. So I'll be on him. Streelman again. He's just playing really well. One thing about him, he's got two straight missed cuts at this tournament, so I'm not really sure about him. I think Peters will be popular. I don't know of how much, if any, I'll have of him. Keegan Bradley, do like him. Ollie, he's interesting, not real sure. Martin Kaymer, he's a guy, Euro guy. He's got the pedigree to win and win by a lot at a tournament like this, so – Martin's interesting to me at 7,500. We already talked about Kokrak, like him a lot. I'm not going to talk about every single one of these guys, but there's a lot of plays I like in this range. Charles Howes is going to be chalky. I think it's an interesting week to go back to Austin Cook. Because one thing you traditionally notice is after a week after a miscut, especially when you're chalky, the guy usually plays better at way less ownership. So 7,300, I'm willing to take a chance or two on Austin Cook there. Vegas, I think that's an underprice on him. Hahn, I like a lot. I could keep going.
Yep. What else? Yeah. What about you, Logan?
Yeah, so you made some good points here. I think one of the guys you haven't mentioned yet, Rafa Cabrera-Bello, I think he was, you know, the chalk last week, but mostly just because of the mispricing. I think they bumped him up this week, and I'll be curious to see if people kind of stick with him, if they were just playing him purely because of the fact that you could kind of fit a top 25 player in the world in at, you know, 6,900 with a lot of those studs. And, I mean, he played well last week, top, I think, 26th place or so. He proved he could putt on Poa decently fine. So I kind of like him there. I still like him just as much as last week, even with the price bump. So go with him there. I think you mentioned Peters maybe fading because of the potential ownership, and I did that last year with him, and then he obviously finished really well, and there was a lot of narrative building around him last year as well, you know, because he was the NCAA champion here. He claims to love the course, fits it, you know, statistically, and I'm probably going to try to play about, you know, field average, try to just match whatever I kind of project as far as my ownership projection goes, just to try to get that exposure. But he's obviously pretty high risk as well, but I think he just too much course history to go away from him there. And then kind of lastly, Patrick Cantlay there. Not really getting much buzz so far. It's pretty early, but 7,600. Not really sure where the buzz has gone because he's been kind of a DFS industry favorite. We'll see how the tags shake out over the course of the week. But I mean, he's been making cuts. He won the Shriners in the fall. He finished 35th at Pebble. So I don't know. I think he's a great ball striker that should be able to. This should be a course that fits him well.
Yeah, I like Cantlay quite a bit. He's on my list. If no one's going to mention him, but you guys hit on most of them already: Streelman, Peters, Cantlay, a couple guys. Charlie Hoffman, 9 of 11 cuts here. T4 last year. He's made at least 5 straight at this event. Pay attention to his recent tournament. We had to withdraw, so see how he's doing. But 7,400 is pretty cheap for Hoffman, who we know can go low at times. You got a guy we already mentioned. If you want to go on, recent form, Sam Saunders is $7,400. T49 here last year in his only appearance. He's made 3 straight cuts, T26 or better in 3 straight events. I'm not all in on him, but that was kind of eye-opening looking at those last 3 events in recent form. Well, you mentioned CH3 is chalky. It's the last West Coast event, so he'll be very chalky. But if you want to pivot around him, you got Martin Flores at 73, who I like a lot. That's my boy. But there's Brian Gay at 7,200. He hasn't played here in 4 years, but he's coming off. He's T9 or better in 3 out of 5 tournaments of late. So keep an eye on Brian Gay at that price. I love how you mentioned Vegas. That's too cheap for him. Talking bombers courses, he could have some funnier T15 here last year. For your cash games, I don't mind Molinari at 7,200. He seems a little safe at times. Other than that, you mentioned James Hahn, who I don't mind. Lucas Glover is always interesting in courses like this at 7,100. And then I want to mention for Bucks, one of his favorite plays is the Golden Cherub, Cam Smith, at 7,100. And you got his other favorite place, Cantlay, at 76. We hit on that one already. But there's a ton of plays here, like you mentioned. We didn't even go over all the possible plays. There's a ton of
them. I mean, there's a lot. And that's the way kind of I think it should be with this pricing is a lot. If you're going to do a lot in 7,000, make me decide between two guys who are legitimate. You know what I mean?
Every price range has like 2 guys you could pivot back or forth.
Yeah, that's how it should be for sure.
All right, let's jump into the 6,000. It's pretty loaded as well, but not as erroneous as last week. So let's kick it off there. What do you like, Logan?
Yeah, so I don't like the 6K range quite as much this week. I think I'm probably going to stick mostly to that 7K range. But down here, one guy I kind of – kind of a soft spot for is Aaron Baddeley. He past winner here. He made a couple cuts in a row. I know a lot of people are probably like saying I'm crazy, but finished 55th at Pebble, 26th at Waste Management. Putts really good just everywhere, but Poa particularly as well. And course history can prove to be an important factor for some of these kind of lower tier pros. And if you like a course, you like a course. So I'm gonna throw a few shares of a Baddeley in there.
There's a hot take. I love it. I like that a lot because I don't think either one of us were gonna mention that one, but yeah. I like that a lot. Jesse, what do you like down below?
Yeah, there's a few. I'm with Logan. I'm gonna try my best not to get in the 6K range. This is how the 6K range should be: is a bunch of sketch dudes who have either terrible or no course history and bad recent form. It's pretty much what you get down here. Uline's interesting. Ryan Armour at 68 or 69, coming off a 20th last week. If he makes the cut, like his last 3 out of 5 tournaments, he's made the cut. He's missed the cut in 2. But he's had 20th, 39th, and 20th. So he becomes, a guy that's maybe potentially playable at 69. And then last but not least, it's been mentioned quite a bit already on, at least I saw it on Twitter earlier, Brandon Harkins. He made a late push on Sunday at Pebble to get inside the top 20, finished 15th. That price is pretty low for him, so I think he's worth a look. But at the same time, like if he's chalky, I don't want any part of him.
I think one guy that I think that is priced correctly, he missed his only cut of the season so far of 2018 at least, but so might be priced correctly, but I think he's got a little bit more talent than the rest of these guys in this range is Ryan Moore. 6,900. He's got pretty good course history here. I'm seeing a couple top tens, 10th place finish in 2016. I think he had a hole in one that year, actually, on one of the par threes. And, he missed the cut at the Waste Management, but finished 6th place at Mayakoba kind of towards the back half of towards the back end of last year. He was playing pretty well towards the end of the fall season. So I think Moore could be able to pick it back up, you know, shake off the rust for 2018 at Waste Management and then get back into it here. And of course, he's played well.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree with the Harkins call. He should be chalky, but he's playing really, really well. Mr. John Hubb, I do bind him at $6,900. Decent course history, not ideal, but he played well here last year, and his recent form is really good. But a couple guys below, Anibon Lahiri at $6,800. Did miss his cut his last time out, was playing really well prior to that. He's 2-for-2 on cuts here. He has a little bit of upside at $6,800 for me. And then one that came into – he finished in the top 10 in points here last year. And before I even looked at that, he's 7-of-7 cuts here, T8 here last year. He got T12 4 years ago, T21 prior to that. He's made his last two cuts. I'm talking Cameron Tringali at $6,700. Could be an interesting play. I know. I'm not I was looking into him, and then the last piece that really swayed me was his recent form here last year and everything like that. So Tringali at 67 could be an interesting low-owned play, hopefully.
The numbers don't lie, for sure. That's pretty really, really good course history.
7-of-7. There's not many perfect scores here at this course.
Definitely interesting. And he – I mean, I've seen him shoot really, really low scores. But he has a tendency. Yeah. He can do it.
Oh, he can blow up.
That's where he should be priced, you know, $6,700, worth a shot down there.
Definitely. All right, let's get into our punts for the week. Logan, give us two or three guys you're looking to punt with.
Well, I guess I started off with my punt of Baddeley, so that was kind of got that one off. But I guess another couple guys down here. I think one guy I've been looking at a bit is Kevin Tway. You know, he hasn't really been playing too well, but. He's been making cuts and, you know, just maybe a couple shares in like the lower dollars. He's got the power, kind of fits the key stats that I was looking at this week. So it doesn't really fit everything, but just purely based off of the stats play, maybe a couple shares of him.
All right, what about you, Jesse?
I like it. I mean, another guy down there in $6,700 range, which I guess you would call a punt. Worth a shot at $6,700 is Bud Cauley.
Yes, definitely.
So I'll use him as my punt this week.
Yeah, mine, I'd probably be looking at Harkins or Tringali. I'm really going to have to hold my own on that one because I think I'll get called out quite a bit if he just goes to poop real quick. Logan, who's your bust of the week? We usually try, I'd say $9,000 or above. Who's the bust up there?
How high and above, sorry?
Like 9,000 or above. And it doesn't mean they don't play well, but they don't meet DraftKings value, basically.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with I'm gonna go with Phil. I think he's just a little too high for me. I think he's in a tier up there. If you look at, you know, the top six price golfers, he just kind of sticks out, or his top seven, including Fleetwood, he sticks out like a sore thumb there. I don't think he'll finish in the top 20, making it so he does not meet price. So I'm gonna go with Phil. Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Totally fine. Jesse, are you gonna go with your usual suspect, Jesse?
Logan's too nice. You know, like usually on this podcast, Logan, you just tear each other's picks up, especially when it comes to
the bus. Yeah, when it comes to the bus, when it's my player to win.
The other regular on this podcast, I would say Justin Thomas. But in the interest of – I don't know you that well, and you're a guest on our podcast, I'm not going to say Justin Thomas. I wasn't going to say him anyway, but Jordan Spieth is my bust. I don't see him winning, and he's just about got to win to pay off $11,300.
Yep, I am with you 100% on Jordan Spieth. That is my bust for the week as well. He did play better the last couple of days, but I don't think he's not all there yet, but one of these weekends he's going to tear a course apart because he's getting close, but not all the way there.
I did read a quote where he said that he figured out the putter, but he still didn't have his ball striking down. So, you know, he gets one a little bit. He doesn't have the full game yet. I mean, it's a work in progress for Jordan.
And, Logan, when you were there on Saturday, I was at the practice green for, like, the first hour and a half or so. I left a little bit after DJ and Spieth teed off. Were you around there at all?
Yeah, I hung out around 18 green, and obviously the practice green's right over there. I hung out there for a while.
It was hilarious because the traffic from the driving range to the practice green was so bad that Spieth literally came in the back way He ran on. He putted like four putts across the green and ran to the tee box. He didn't get to practice putting.
Oh, he was late to the
green. I was like, no, he was stuck in traffic because there's a good ways to go in between, and there you think they make a clear path for the players. No, they don't.
Good old Bay Area. It was funny because
yeah, there you go. Give us two or three core players you're looking at this week, Logan, to build your lineups around.
Yeah, so obviously kind of a summary of what we've been talking about, but I'm going with Thomas, and that's for GPPs, just to be clear. I realize he's kind of, you know, he's got that huge winning upside, but a lot of times he can be a little bit risky in cash games. Sometimes he kind of mails it in. So in GPPs, Thomas will be kind of my core play at the top, and then try to mix in some of those higher 7K guys that I mentioned earlier. So Cantlay and Cabrera Bayo will be like kind of the two I highlight here for a core of three. And I think it's going to be hard for me to get off of Charles Howe, even though he's going to probably be chalky. I think I'll have to throw him in a couple lineups as well.
Like, what about you, Jesse?
Yeah, DJ up top, 100% almost. Hard for me to ever go 100%. Reavy, I think, will be on a lot of teams for me this week. And then I don't know if I'm going to be able to fit it in, but Fleetwood as well. I just don't know how all that's going to fit in. But I'm going to have a lot of shares of all three of those guys. How it's going to work out, we'll figure that out later.
Yeah, my main three is going to be Reavy, Kuchar, and Fleetwood. That'll be my kind of building blocks. And then get goofy after that. Who's your pick to win, Logan?
Pick to win. All right, do I go off the cuff here?
You can pick DJ, and then you can give us a wild card if it makes you feel
better. No. I'll go with Thomas. I'm gonna stick to it. I think he's got the game to win here, even though, you know, he might not have shown it before. But I'm gonna go with Thomas.
Not bad value on him, 51 right now.
Yeah, exactly. I like that.
Perfect. What about you, Jesse?
My pick to win. I mean, this is kind of an odd question, considering he already knows.
Tommy Fleetwood. Yeah, I was going to say Fleetwood.
I got him at 23.
23?
Yeah.
All right. If I had to, I would say DJ, but that's boring. What's he at now? He's 5 this morning.
4. I got him at 4.
Yeah, so my alternative pick, I would be with you, Jesse. I'll be going Fleetwood at 21. No. Now, that does not mean I'm not using him as my OAD, though. I'm saving him for later for that. But
yeah, I'm with you.
If I had to put,
he won't be mine.
If I had to put scratch down, it would be Fleetwood.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Any last things, Logan? Any plugs you want to put out there for Fanshare or your work coming up?
Yeah, so I think, you know, Fanshare has been doing a lot of new additions to the site, kind of have a new section called kind of DraftKings performance. You can track tags and ownership and points for, you know, whether it's the last three events, the individual events over the course of the season. So we got a lot of historical information there. And then obviously kind of my article each week and my ownership projections. So sign up today, fansharesports.com, and follow me on Twitter at LoganHarper22.
Awesome, man. Thanks for joining us. Any final words, Jesse?
That's it, man. Thanks for coming on, Logan. Thanks for subbing in for Bucks. This is going to be a really fun week. Also, thank you, DraftKings, for not effing the pricing up this week for once.
Yeah, pretty solid pricing, and I echo Jesse's sentiments. Logan, thanks for joining us, man. It was really awesome. Remember, everybody, check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Logan mentioned he's at LoganHarper22. I'm at BDNTrick, and the podcast is at AlwaysPressDFS. Remember, check us out throughout the week. We're on the SD Slack chat answering questions. If we're not in there, just leave the question, and we'll be back. We're always in and out of there some way or another with Rob and Kevin, myself, and Jesse. So check it all out, and good luck this week. This is your 2018 Genesis Open DFS preview. We'll catch you guys later.